Hi, family. My name is Leon. I'm an addict.
Hey, Leon.
I'm blessed with the gift of recovery. You know, I was, got to tell on my disease because, you know, that's what I practice today. And I think this workshop is basically what my sponsor told me is based on how we incorporate the steps of Narcotics Anonymous in our practice and in our study group. And one is snitching on my disease and telling folk about how I feel. At least somebody close to me, somebody I trust. You understand? Because you can't tell everybody how you feel, you know. But my sponsor tells me that find somebody that I'm intimate with. I use my wife sometimes, and I use my sponsor. But I got to be honest because it says it's an honest program, and trust me, I come from a spirit of dishonesty. You understand? So I got to keep that up front. But yesterday I kind of moseying through the facility here, and my disease tricked me out. That's what he do, because he tricks me through thought. So what happened was, I said, let me go up here and check out the room that I'm supposed to share on this workshop with, right? And I came up here and I seen ballroom two, and I saw all these chairs. I said, goodness gracious. I said, suppose this place be filled up. What are you going to do, Leon? And it dawned on me that, see, the reason why, you know, the fear kicked in, you understand, because I'm thinking all these people going to be in there, my disease hit me again, said, well, maybe it's an early shop, so maybe most people be asleep anyway, so it won't be that crowded in here. Then you can kind of get your little thing off, you know. But I understand, too, that it ain't my thing. You know, trust me. What you are embarking on and what you may hear, you know, best of my high apologies, high powers, knowledge, and the sponsors is not mine. I'm not that smart. That's just simple. See, I didn't come in the program with spiritual principles, without a doubt. And when they talk about change or die, you understand, that was really spooky. You understand? Because I got here, I just thought that all I need to do is stop using mood-altering chemicals, and everything is going to be all right. But I found out that that wasn't true. You know, I definitely found out that wasn't true. But, you know, I must implore everybody to get a sponsor and to embark this road of recovery, especially through the change process, you know. And I had to kind of understand what the workshop was. I didn't know what that was either. The sponsor helped me with that. So he said, Leon, you know, share basically on how change operates in your life. It's not so much about your war stories, you know, because my sponsor keeps me in the here and the now, you know, because I think most of us, or all of us, we got through here through the same avenues. You understand? I can talk about crap in the street, but they say we're more alike than different in the street, and we're more alike than different in the program. And that's what I came to find out, that what was your problem, Leon? How does your disease affect you? How does your disease even work on you, Leon? And this year we was in a practice, and every year when we do our revolution of the steps, you know, I kind of step up to another level of understanding and another level of spiritual growth. And this year we traveling with our love hunger, you understand? And I said, well, how does that have anything to do with your problem? And they said, well, we are more alike than different. Why? Because we all have a love hunger and low self-esteem. And if you heard what I was saying in the beginning, that's how I opened up. See, when I walked up here yesterday, that was what hit me, my low self-esteem. See, because I don't, you know, it's hard for me to want to recognize the fact that, Leon, you kind of doing a little bit better today. But see, my disease attacked me and tell me, Leon, you ain't nothing. That came from somewhere. It came from somewhere. You know, so, and in our search process, you know, we searching and we finding out, I'm finding out who I am as a person. You know, I'm talking about man of color, family of origin, and I found out that my mother, she was an addict. My mother was an addict, and I can remember when I was a little tot, and she used to always tell me, said, boy, I should have dropped you down the toilet. You know, I was always a disobedient little boy. I was setting fires. I was breaking out windows. I was stealing ever since I could remember. And my mother said, boy, I should have dropped you in the toilet from the start. And I'm trying to, is that where my love hunger comes from? Is that where my not being wanted comes from? You understand? Because I couldn't understand none of this. But see, a sponsor helped me realize that these are the things, the issues that I grew up with. These are the things that make Leon feel less than, not worthy. And it affects me in most areas of my life. I'm talking about most areas of my life. And presently, I'm pretty much dealing with personal attacks and stress. Boy, if you say something about my character, boy, I can get ugly. It could be good or bad. That shows you how my disease works. If a guy say, man, I respect your recovery, you're doing a heck of a guy, and the ego will tell me one minute, Leon, you got it going on. And the next second, you say, but you really know you ain't squat. So what I'm saying is the disease of addiction is so tricky. I'm talking about the obsession and understanding it. Understanding the obsession in its full measures. Spooky stuff. They say this is a spiritual program. Now, what the literature says, it's a spiritual program. Okay, well, Leon, why do you want to come in the program and just change in the physical? So you change in the physical, Leon. You put on the outside stuff. See, you healing through object referral. So I got gold around my neck and on my fingers. I got gator shoes on my feet. You know what I'm saying? You know, I got a nice fine car. And I got a nice little honey on my wing. And I got it going on. But guess what? The program tell us we're supposed to love one another. And I'm a player hater. I'm a cold-blooded player hater. I don't like you because of your gear. I don't speak to you because you share better than I do. I don't like you because your woman is finer than mine. I don't like you because your job is better than mine. And God bless us with all of this stuff. The program tells us to change or die. So now I had to understand and get with a sponsor and through the steps that the program that God has blessed us with, our power blessed us with, and find out really how to change. But first I had to understand what was wrong with me. I had to understand what was I changing from, and what was I trying to evolve to be. Oh, now here comes the tricky stuff. Now I want to change spiritually. I really want to do this. But see, my disease tell me that I got to give up some things. Oh, Leon, you got to let the women go. You can't have 2-3 now. You know what I'm saying? You can't have 2-3 women. See, I went through that process, and I had this triangle of females, and I was confused. I was just confused. And my sponsor, and I go to my sponsor, and I said, man, I really, really want me a nice woman. I said, at this time I was 50 years old, and I said, I really want to settle down. I want to deal with my loneliness. And he said, well, Leon, you got to be what you want. Simple stuff. I thought he was going to tell me something most profound. And then I looked at him. I said, be what you want. He said, you're a whore. So how do you expect to get a decent woman and you're a whore? So you got to be what you want. So if you want a good woman, you got to be a good man. I was sitting in a little room, and I had a little time to pray and meditate. And I kept asking my high power, we call him the boss. You know, I think you better have a boss. You know, I learned why. And it has to do with the change process. You know, and I was praying and meditating, and I kept saying, well, God, who is she? Who is she going to be? You know. But first of all, there's some other things that happened because I had to learn to sit with self and be with self. See, I had to learn to start going to the movie theater by myself. See, I had to learn how to go out to the little dances and then roll out. See, I had to learn how to stop flirting with the girls. You know, because see, I'm tricky dude. See, my disease would trick me up. See, because I tend to think that I can, you know, talk a little good. I think most addicts got a pretty good gift of gab. You know, we blessed with that area. We all of us got that gift. And I could be in a meeting and a young lady come to me and say, "Will you help me with the steps, Leon?" And then I go with the step book in one hand and my anatomy in the other. You know, so now I had to get real with this thing. I had to get real what was stumping my growth. I had to get real what was stopping Leon from growing spiritually. Because I can't serve two masters. You understand? See, I can't serve my disease, the lower self, and serve my higher power too. So some things had to start happening. Some change had to come about. You understand? So I got with my sponsor, and I got a sponsor. He's a step Nazi. He, excuse the language, but I hope no Nazis in here. But I mean, he's just where he is, and he never lets you off the hook. Always got an assignment for you. When you see him, I got an assignment for you. Now, let me show you something. I don't live with my sponsor, but I'm intimate with him. You know, I see him all the time because he works in a barbershop, and so he's convenient. But I find that the people closest to me knows me. They sees me. And these are the people that I embark upon to help me with my fourth step. See, these are the people that helps me see Leon. Because Leon don't see self too good. See, Leon do not see self too good. Because my disease sends an illusion. It tells Leon he got it going on. He tells Leon, "Leon, what you're doing is all right." You understand? And you know, I looked at a practice that we're into right now. And it's, what am I doing that God don't like? And when you think about that type of assignment, so much come out of it. Man, I had a list of stuff. But I only could do one at a time. See, one at a time. You know, I was talking about the obsession and this full measures of understanding the obsession, you know, and defined, and this might be a little spooky, but I won't go there because if I don't, then I'll be disobedient. And my higher power will spank me for that. And no question, he spanks me today when I don't do what he tells me to do. You know, the obsession in its full measures defined is evil spirit in possession of the body. You sit with that one a minute. Evil spirit in possession of the body. So I found out, and I'm learning, that the obsession attacks me through thought. And when I act out, and I don't know, see, some things I don't know, but the obsession knows. The obsession knows. He knows me better than I know me. He knows what made Leon act out. So he attacked me, and he had me doing all kind of crazy stuff. And I think, wow, what's happening, Leon? Where did this come from? But the things that I have changed, or I'm working toward change at in this program, the things that I'm working toward change at, once the change process is kicked in and the obsession attacked me again through thought, and then I do it, then I found out that was my self-will. They told me when I came here, said, "You have a choice today." I had to understand that, because cliches have a very, very highly spiritual value to them. The choice was, when I got here, I didn't have a choice. I did whatever I was told to do. But now that I have a choice, it's because I know right from wrong. See, my morals has changed a little bit. My values has changed a little bit. You understand? So, and my belief has changed a little bit. So now when I embark upon old behavior, then that's just plain old self-will. Because I know better. You know, change, as I understand it, and I looked at it, and I went over with my sponsor, and he showed me the flip side of change, and I'm going to show you how it just worked on me just the other day. the change process, and how my disease operated in the change process was some things has changed in my life, and the program says that's how I build my self-esteem. My self-esteem builds when I change spiritually. Here's a guy that come to me and says, Leon, we dance on Sunday nights from 9 to 5. Now, I'm from kind of old school, around the metropolitan area of Washington, D.C., so hand dancing, I grew up under that and bopping and type of thing. And we got an old school thing that we like to do that. But it's a Sunday. And I'm in another fellowship on Sunday now, so, you know, I kind of learned to understand my higher power in that area, too. And the guy was telling me, they said, man, you wasn't at the dance last Sunday. And I said, man, I can't hardly factor that into my spirit no more. He said, but ain't nothing wrong with a little bit of hand dancing, man. And I said, but I what I was wind up doing was I was justifying why I don't dance on Sunday. I don't know nobody no explanation about my change process. The biggest thing is this. I felt bad. Man, I'm sitting there justifying why I don't dance on Sunday no more. And I'm feeling bad because I've changed in that area. So what I'm saying is my disease attacks me both ways. It attacked me. I think that might be the hardest part about the change. Is that when I do change in certain areas of my life, that my disease still attack me. It still tell me I ain't squat. It still tell me don't nobody want me. Still tell me nobody loves me. And that's my problem. And that's how it keeps me stuck. Nobody loves you, Leon. Nobody wants you. Your mama told you that anyway. She didn't want you. You know, and then I get in relationships along the way. And some girl dumped me. And I go right back. I go right back to my past. Then those issues of love, not being wanted, not being worthy, low self-esteem. Change process is so difficult. I was in the VA hospital in 1995, and one of the counselors that told me said, Leon, the program is simple, but it's not easy. And I couldn't understand none of that stuff then. I mean, they say keep coming back, more is revealed. You know, and then I'm starting to understand why. It's simple, but not easy. Because it's a change process. And it takes time. It don't happen overnight. It don't happen overnight, you know. It's a practice. It's a practice. None of us are perfect. My sponsor tells us, he says, Leon and the rest of our group, he says, when you fall short in your spiritual journey, pick your tail up. Get back in the race. Keep your focus. Keep your commitment. You know, I said a lot about to change and didn't say much about to die. Well, I'm going to keep that kind of real simple. So I'll keep that real simple. I found out that I didn't have a whole lot of information from my sponsor about that, but I got some experiences now. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a whole lot of profound information to tell you. But I know one thing. If I get complacent, I'm dead man. See, the program tells me that this is a journey. And it's a journey of spiritual growth and spiritual change. And if I'm not changing in those areas, if my meeting criteria stop because I changed in the physical. You understand? See, I get two jobs now. You know, I got a wife now.
Help somebody.
You know. So I don't have time to go to meetings. I got the kids around. I got the grandkids around. You know. So all of these things becomes priority in my life. God gave me recovery, but I place all these objects before that, before my recovery. I place all these objects before God. I just need to say this because it's important for me. You know, I've got some brothers and I need to pray for them, and I'm not talking about them, I'm not judging them, but I'm talking about dying. And the program, you know, they kind of mustered up some double figure time and they graduated. And there's a lot of turbulence going on in their life. And the evidence comes to me that I need to stay doing, keep continue to do what I'm doing. You understand? Because some people ask me, you ain't stopped going to meetings yet? Why do you still go to meetings? I say this is a spiritual journey that's ongoing. You never arrive here. You never arrive. It's a program of progress, not perfection. You understand? And I'm going to fall short. So I need to stay here. Because I need you folks to tell me, Leon, you out of character. You know, because my character is not like it was when I first came in here. And I told you some of my friends don't hardly speak to me anymore. You know, some of my network buddies. You know, you love this one. I go in some meetings sometimes and folk get up and walk out. And the program says we're supposed to love one another. And I said we play our haters. Oh, we play our haters. No question about it. I don't like her hairdo. Her fingernails look pretty. Her gear is down. You know, all the little type of things. And the program tells you're supposed to love one another. And we think we really got it going on in the program. Think we got it going on. And we can't even love our brother. We can't even love our sister. But you know, the evidence of death is spiritually for me right now. It could lead to a physical. I'm quite sure we got some folks in here that know some people that's dead physically. And we got some folks in here that we know that's died spiritually. You understand? You know, it's one part of literature says that fruit, we're supposed to be bearing fruit. And when we stop watering the plant or the tree, the fruit withers away. It rots. So I don't want to be a rotten fruit in the program, you know. I stay connected, you know, and you know, it's been an awesome journey for me. You know, it's never ending. Every time I think I can kind of be easy now. I just finish dealing with something that I've gotten better with, and then something else pop up. Something else pop up. Oh, no question. And right now, I'm dealing with in the change process. I'm dealing with my abrasive tone of voice toward folk. Right. Oh man, I can get abrasive with you. If you say something to me, or if I'm stressed out, boy, let toward the end of the day come when my job been ripping ran me all around much metropolitan area, and I think Leon says it's time to go home. They don't say it's time to go home, you know. And I call them and they say you got one more job, and I get abrasive, and our sponsor got me practicing kindness and love. You know, and pray, you know, 9 times before I pick up my next cell phone to call and let them know I'm finished with one and what's next on the agenda. You know, I have to say, God, help me now. I ain't got no power. You know, I need your power. Help me because I'm going to get ugly, you know. And it works. Trust me, it works, man. I find a lot of peace with inviting my higher power in, you know, because the first step tells me I'm powerless anyway. And the second step tells me, Leon, get you a higher power. Why? Why, Leon? Why do you need a higher power? Why can't you do this thing on your own? Why can't you just read the literature? Why can't you read the literature and go through this change process? Why can't you do it, Leon? Because they tell us to do not lean on your own understanding. And I don't have the spiritual eye no way. I don't have it to some degree. But I don't have the degree that my sponsor may have it at. See? So I need to incorporate a higher power because that's who I'm going to need. That's who I'm going to need to fight this journey, fight with me on this journey, because my disease is attacking. Always attacking me through thought. Eats me up. Fancy tail girl walk by. My disease get busy. I'm just talking about me now. She walked by and said, But see, my awareness is up. See, I know women is a weakness to me. You know, see, so I don't flirt with that. I don't flirt with that. You know, I don't hang around meetings no more like I used to after the meetings. I do a meeting, get in my car and go. I'm talking. See, I basically be careful the meetings I choose around Washington Metropolitan Area. Because, see, they say newcomers, we eat them up. We supposed to be loving them. I hang around meetings where they come in by van loads. And I'm sitting there with a motive. With a motive. You know, so I kind of be careful. See, I choose the meetings I go to. You know, so I won't die. So I won't die. Die comes with complacency. Say this and I'm going to pass the dice. I was listening to a gentleman speak about spiritual death. And I never even, and this came by, boy, my high power just working, man, all the time working. He sends me just what I need at the proper time. You know, I was listening to this guy, and he was saying how having a higher power and how to connect to a higher power. I can pray all I want to. If I don't have faith, faith is what connects me to my higher power. See, then I have to have some belief in the change process. Now, but what I found out on the other side was that I can die in the program through bad knowledge. Boy, that knocked me down. But this journey just don't never stop. You just learn more and more. And I looked at that thing. I said, well, I got a sponsor and I'm going over the steps. And we as sponsors and I can't judge nobody, but we have faith in bad knowledge in the steps and die right in the program. We have sponsors that tell us it's okay to have fun in the program. Okay, it is okay to have fun in the program. It is, trust me, I have fun. I just don't have fun in the way that I used to have fun. See, I don't have fun in my old ways anymore. And I found out that my disease still tricked me up every now and then, and I find myself back in relapse. And I want to talk about relapse for a second before I quit. I was here the other night, and a guy had thought I was talking about relapse in the street. I mean, I relapsed back to a mood-altering chemical. And my sponsor broke relapse down to me. He said, Leon, he said, relapse is when we go back to our old ways. See, we ain't got to pick up no mood altering chemical. Relapse also is when my disease have me thinking back in my old way. See, I could be standing on one of them corners. See, I could be standing outside one of them meetings and I get it reminiscing about the old days. And I get a euphoria. All of a sudden, I'm fixing the feeling again. I'm feeling good. I'm reminiscing about the old times. And I'm in relapse. That's why my sponsor tell me to stay in the here and the now. He said, Leon, leave the war story out there. You got enough crap going on with you in the program. You got enough crap going on right now to take a look at. You ain't got to go back there. Because drugs wasn't my problem, no way. I just told you it was my love hunger. It's my low self-esteem that caused me to fix the feeling. That's all I was doing. I was fixing the feeling through my love hunger and my low self-esteem. Act like you don't want me. Act like you don't want me around. See, all I want to be is loved and worshiped. That's all I want. Love me. Worship me. The kicker is this. The kicker is this. I use crazy addictions to get it done. See, I use all kind of crazy. And sex is the big one. That's how disease works. Most time we first get clean, first thing jump up. Got to have somebody. Got to have somebody. Love hunger. Low self-esteem, low self-worth. I change and I work through my low self-esteem and my love hunger through spiritual principles. I try to learn to do God's will for me today. I had to learn what it was. I know the will of my disease. I don't know God's will too well. I want to thank CPRC 1515 for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope on Change or Die. I've seen the deaf spiritually and some friends of mine presently, and I pray for them and hope they find their way back. And I just pray that I stay. And that's the evidence that I have that change works. And what will happen if I die? Right here in the program. I want to thank you for allowing me to share. I'll keep coming back.
Oh, man. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Cassandra. Hi, everybody. My name is Cassandra, and I am an addict. And the first thing I'd like to ask is for everybody to hug someone and tell them, change or die.
Change or die, baby.
I have to admit that I am very nervous, because I don't consider myself a speaker, but I do have a story to tell. And I had, when the person called me to share this meeting, when I put the phone down, well, I was happy when I talked to her on the phone, and when I put the phone down, the drama came. I'm like, oh, Lord, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? And the funny thing about it is I've always wanted to be an actress, and since I've been in recovery, I've had the opportunity to be in several plays. But the thing about that is I don't have to be Cassandra. I don't have to tell you all about myself. And today I'm trying to stand up here and tell you about who I am, irregardless of what you all think. I want to say that God unlocked the gates of hell for me. All I had to do is push the door open. And I always tell my friends that I've been to hell. I have been to hell. Out there on those streets was hell for me, so I'm not worried about going to hell. To show you how good God is in this program, my son chaired a meeting yesterday. God is good. This is an honor to be here. And to let you know that I was prepared, I have my little cards. Because I have extensive brain damage. And I can be in the middle of a conversation, something else will come along, and I'm somewhere else. I forget what I was talking about. So that's good, too. All that's good. But I'm going to tell my story. But the first thing I'd like to say is if God is your co-pilot, you better switch seats. My clean date is October 10th, 1989. And I have to tell you all that I had it all planned. I was going to go to this detox place out way out in Rockville somewhere. But I was going to get high the day before. That was going to be my last blast, you know. Do you know that I could not get high? First of all, I had relapsed before, and I had known about this fellowship before I went back out. And I was scared, really. I was really scared to really, you know, really get a good, you know, hit or whatever. I was just scared. And then I looked around, and it was all over with. So I know that was the devil trying to say, oh, you need one more day, you know. But I know for a fact, if it wasn't for you all, this program and God, I would be 6 feet under. You know, a lot of people, well, I know that, you know that song, Bag Lady? Yeah. That's what I was in the end. I was a 40-year-old bag lady with grown children and grandchildren, and I still couldn't figure it out. I grew up with four brothers. I was born feeling very uncomfortable in my own skin. I had two brothers older than me and two younger. I just want to tell you how it all began, some of it for me. But like I said before, I was born feeling uncomfortable before anything else came up. My father drank. He was an alcoholic, and he was also a gambler. He used to go to the racetrack every day. And if he won, we would pray for him to win, because when he came home and he was a winner, everybody was safe. But most of the time, he came home a loser, and we all suffered. I grew up in a household where it was either sexual abuse, mental abuse, or physical abuse on a daily basis, and sometimes all three. I used to say that I was a victim, but today, since I've been in recovery, I know that I am a survivor. My mother always used to try to fix me up. She sent me to self-improvement school and dancing lessons. And in a way, really, when I think about it now, she was really trying to help me. But I looked at it as that she didn't really like what I was and she wanted me to be something better. But in a way, now that I take a second look at it, you know, because sometimes we can look at stuff from the, you know, that happened to us and we can see it totally wrong. It don't even really have to be the way we think it is, but we take that and run with it. And it just takes us down the wrong path all our whole lives. And I'm one of those people that had to go to therapy, you know, to get some outside help so that I could take a real look at what really happened. You know, what happened, put it out there on the table, talk about it, and move on. You know, because I stuffed that shit. When I was a child, you know, sexual abuse and stuff like that, and I was helpless and I had to deal with it, you know, I buried it so I could survive. But in order today for me to feel better, that self-esteem that we all talk about, I had to take that shit and pull it out and look at it again and dissect it so that I could move on. You know, because resentments will destroy you from inside out. When I got here, my father had passed. And so I wrote a letter to him. And I told him about my feelings about the things that happened. And I expressed, you know, the fact that I have always been in search of a man's love because he didn't love me. You know, and I realize today that it's very important for a father to express love to his daughter. Because if she doesn't get it from her father, then she's going to be looking from it in all the wrong places. And that's what happened to me. And I didn't realize it until I got here. I remember, you know, coming up with my brothers. I was the only girl, so I didn't have anybody else to play with but them. And I don't know if y'all know about this game called Mom the Peg. Well, it's a knife game, and you flip the knife down in the dirt. And if you don't get through the whole thing right, then you end up going down with your mouth trying to pull the knife out of the dirt. And believe me, dirt was a daily part of my diet because I could never figure it out, but I was always playing with them and eating dirt. But after a while, you know, when us girls start developing and, you know, looking a certain way, my parents wouldn't even let me go out and play with them anymore, you know. But little did they know that there was stuff going on behind their back and they were wasting their time, really. But I started isolating after that, you know, because I couldn't play with my brothers. My father had the nerve to be strict with all that was going on in my house. So I couldn't go out and be with people, and I couldn't function with my own brothers in the house, so they thought. So I started isolating, and I had a hell of a fantasy. I would go in my room, and I'd be talking to people, and you know, I'd sneak animals in. I'd have all kinds of cats and dogs in my room for months at a time, and my parents never knew about it, you know. And I'd keep them, they would be little puppies and little kittens, and I'd pull out the drawer when I go in the evening and play with them and feed them and stuff, and then I'd push the drawer back in and leave this much space for them to breathe. Just so I have somebody in there to play with when I came home. And today is funny, but it's kind of sad too. But you know, that's what's doing what I had to do to survive. I also had a window in my room that was facing the front, and I could look out and see all the neighbors, their comings and goings. So I'd sit there and just watch other people go by. But I just never felt good about myself. I felt different. I felt like somebody from another planet, really. Just, you know, I just didn't know what was wrong with me, but I just didn't feel right. And so finally, I think I was about 13 years old, I had my first drink. Alcohol is a drug. And every bad feeling I had about myself went out the window. In fact, I felt the total opposite of the way I had felt before I picked up a drink. I felt like I was glamorous, I was smart, I was the best dancer. I had a witty conversation, you name it, I was it. But that was all false, you know. I heard somebody say they went to a party when they were 13. When they were 40 years old, the party was over. So was half of their life. And that's my story. After my disease progressed, I remember when I used to smoke marijuana, and somebody said, you know, that's a progressive thing, you know. I'm like, no, it's not. I hope they make this shit legal, because this shit is the best. And after a while, it started making me paranoid, you know. And so I moved on to other things, not thinking that, you know, I was progressing. But no, I was just fixing myself up and making myself feel good by just changing to something else. I know they talk about certain things we should say and we should not say. But I have to say certain things to express how I feel. And I was an alcoholic long before I knew I was an addict. You know, I mean, I was drank before, after, and in between. You know, and not until I ran into that crack did I realize all the addictions that I had. That shit knocked me to my knees. After the sexual abuse, the incest in my family, and all the things that had gone on in my life, I felt like the world owed me something. I'm sure you all know what that feels like. I'm going to go out in this world. I'm going to make this world pay me for the suffering that I had, especially men, you know, but because of my father and my brother sexually abusing me and mistreating me. I'm going to make them pay, not knowing that I was the one that was really doing more damage to myself than I ever did to anybody else. I did do a little bit of research when I knew that I had to share today. And I stumbled upon the seventh step, humility, humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. And I did that step without really realizing the effect it would have later in my recovery. My higher power uses humility on me to make me change, you know, to remove my shortcomings. And I have had plenty of experience with it since I've taken that step. I want to say that when I first got clean, that's about a year after I had been clean. Well, first of all, after I came out of the, first I went to an 18-month treatment program after I left the detox place I was telling you about. And I went to this 18-month program. And have you all ever scrubbed the bathroom floor with a toothbrush? Well, I did. And about three people were standing over top of me, cussing me out, telling me what kind of dope fiend I was, you know. But I stayed there for 4 months. I don't know how I did it. And the next thing you know, me and a man was out the door. But in 3 months' time, my disease was 100 times worse than what it was. And they call that the sleeping tiger. Because when you stop using, that tiger goes to sleep, but you better not wake him up. I mean, it was scary for me for 3 months. My disease, I was moving so fast, it just was scary. So I said, well, I missed something along the way. I got to go back and do this again. So I went back to the detox place, and then I went to the 1 month program this time. And after I got out of that program, they wanted to send me home, and I'm not like, no, you can't send me home, because, you know, during all of this, I have had about four husbands. And I was with one of them at the time, and he was using. And I told them, please don't send me back there. So they took me behind God's back somewhere in southern Maryland to a place called Leonardtown, to Marcy House. And I don't do too good with authority figures. You know, people telling me what to do. I'm 40 years old. I'm a grandmother. What are you talking about? But, of course, I got put out of that program for having a relationship on the premises. And I had to go live in a shelter, y'all. Talking about change or die, I had to go live in a shelter. But I did have a sponsor, and I did go to meetings. And I finally got a job and got my own place. And I just were with me during my whole addiction. And I just want to say that you mothers that have young children, it is a blessing that you don't have to take your children through what I took my children through. But I felt a lot of guilt when I came in here because of that, a lot of guilt. Sometimes I still suffer with it when I talk to my children, because I can see some of the damage that I caused. Even though that I know that God has forgiven me, sometimes it's hard for me to forgive myself, you know, because sometimes I guess I don't feel like I deserve to be forgiven. You know, how can you neglect your own children? How can you take your food stamp that you're going to feed your children with and go buy drugs? You know, but that's my disease. My disease made me do that. You know what I'm saying? I didn't care about nothing but my next hit. You know what I'm saying? That's where that shit takes you. You know, it's not something that you want to do. You know, I can apologize over and over and over and over to my kids, but I can't go back and change it. And I wish to God I could, but I can't. But, you know, I was told that my three-year-old grandson was living with his mother, and she was using. And she'd leave him home by himself, or he was coming out the woods by himself, and all kinds of stuff. So you know what I did, right? I went and got my grandson, and I'm going to take care of him with almost a year clean, right? And during the course of that time, he was having problems, behavior problems, because his mother used the whole time she was carrying him. And he had to go to the doctor a lot. He had to be put on medication. I had to take off from work a lot. I had to miss a lot of meetings because he had to go to bed, you know. And most of the time in St. Mary's County, they just had one or two meetings at night, an 8:30 meeting. So it was either him or me. That's what it really got down to. And my sponsor said to me, my son's sponsor said, you got to give that little boy up or you're going to die. My sponsor told me, change or die. Stop trying to take care of somebody else until you take care of yourself. And honey, I'm going to tell you all, that was the hardest decision I have ever had to make. But I had to write the judge a letter and tell the judge that I could not keep my grandson, as much as I loved him, but I was not going to live if I tried to keep him. And I had to turn my grandson back over to the court. And when I went in there that day, my family was there, my daughter was there. They were all looking at me like, why did you do that? What are you doing? And I felt so horrible, you know, because I'm the grandmother. Everybody needs help, and I'm letting everybody down. And I cried for a long time about that. But my grandson is 13 years old today. He's on the honor roll. I get to take him to basketball practice. We go to the movies. We do all kinds of things together. And I just want to tell you all, sometime when it's time to make a change, we have tunnel vision. We can't really see what's down the road. We can't see the big picture. You know, and today I can see that I made the right decision. Because I got mad with my sponsor. How could you tell me to give up my own grandson? What kind of sponsor are you? My sponsor was right. that I wouldn't be here in front of you all now if it wasn't for that. To show you all that I was searching for something for a long time. You know, like I said, I was married a lot of times and had countless relationships. I've been a Buddhist and a Muslim and a Catholic and a Baptist. You know, just searching, searching, searching for something on the outside to fix the inside. And I found nothing. Nothing. And I searched high and low. I am still sick, but I'm getting better. This convention is a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I bought 10 outfits down here. My girlfriend told me the other day she was just bringing 2 outfits. And I'm like, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. But my higher power is helping me, y'all. My higher power is going to help me because I asked him to help me and help me remove my shortcomings, and he's doing it right now. About 2 months ago, I had changed doctors and went to a new doctor and got a physical. And for some reason, when the doctor called me back, you know, when the doctor called you back, it's something up. But for some reason, I wasn't real nervous about it. You know, I just went on in. And I guess God had me right there. He had me right then. And I went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, you have hepatitis C. And not only that, it's chronic hepatitis C. I don't mean to harm y'all, but I've been healthy all my life. You know, I don't know how, you know, I remained healthy. But the bill is in the mail. The bill is in the mail. It might not get you yet, but it's going to get you, and you better be ready. Because I destroyed my own body. Nobody else did nothing to me. I did it to myself. But I was kind of, you know, I'm going to talk about the real me. When the doctor told me, I was upset. You know, I was upset for me. I got this chronic hepatitis C, and I'm going to have to take 3 needles a week and medicine 2 times a day, and it has terrible side effects, you know. And I didn't want to do it. You know, but God is so good because he sent me somebody right away that has been going through it, has been taking the needles and the medication and dealing with the side effects. And I call that person practically every day. And they have guided me through this thing. And God had put somebody right there to help me. You know, and y'all need to know about the hepatitis C. You know, that's something, maybe that's part of why I have it. So I can tell you that the doctors do not test for it. You know, it just was random that the doctor just happened to test me for it. Because she said I've probably had it since I've been clean. And it's a silent disease because you don't even know the symptoms of it. The symptoms are like nausea once in a while and maybe being tired sometime. You know, but anything, I mean, that can come from anything. You know, so you all better go get yourself checked and find out. Because, it's out there, and a lot of us haven't. I want to say that I had, well, I had one sponsor, and then I got another sponsor. I met a lady that had 35 years clean that I really, really liked. And somehow or another, she found out about me having hepatitis C before I got a chance to tell her, because I was afraid to tell people at first. You know, I went through the process. But I know today that I really don't want nobody in my life that don't know who I am. If they can't deal with me, you know, my bisexuality, my hepatitis C, all the things about me, then good. I don't need you in my life. But, what was I talking about? Huh? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I knew it was gonna happen. But yeah, So what happened was, you know, also a lot of things was happening through this, you know, discovery of the hepatitis that helped me with it. I watched this movie about maybe 3 months ago called Seven. I don't know if y'all saw it, about Seven Sins. And this woman, this serial killer took this woman and cut her, carved her face up with a knife. And he glued a phone in one hand and some sleeping pills in the other hand. And he said, now, you can call for help and be dismembered for the rest of your life, or you can take these sleeping pills. And I'm like, what? Why would she take this? She took the sleeping pills and killed herself. I'm like, why would she do that? But for real, that's what I was getting ready to do. Because I had also have psoriasis. And I went to NIH about a month ago to find out if they could do anything about my psoriasis. And they said, no, we can't do nothing about your psoriasis. Because you're taking that medicine for hepatitis C, and it's gonna make it worse. Nothing we could do. So I stopped taking my medicine for a whole week. You know, so what was that doing? You know? And then, again, a good friend of mine picked up the phone and called me and said, her brother just died because he stopped taking his hepatitis medicine. You know, I mean, transplant or cancer of the liver. Those are my choices. And today I want to live. You know, I have a grandson and a granddaughter and a son that I am so proud of. My daughter, she's a mother today. She takes her son to all kinds of affairs. Both of my children, you know, try to be good parents. We go to meetings together sometime. We always show up at each other's anniversaries. And that, in a way, that's God showing me that He forgives me for what happened back then. You know, how many people can look around and see their children in a meeting with them? You know, all I could do was be an example. You know, come in here and work in H&I and work with my sponsees and pray. That's all I could do. You know, and God has blessed me with two children in recovery, my grandchildren. I'm here for my mother. Let me tell y'all something. When I got here, also, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life because I never really had a job over 3 months, maybe a year at the most. And it was really because I really didn't know what I wanted to do, you know. And plus, I was on it. And I was not a functioning addict. I might get a job today and tomorrow if I got a good package. I was not coming back to work no more, you know. So that's how it went with me. But I looked in the paper after I had about 2 or 3 years clean. I saw this job called activity coordinator, working with senior citizens. And all I knew is that I had been an aerobics instructor before, and I liked arts and crafts, and I liked the party, you know. And so that's what I do. I plan parties and trips and tell jokes and play games. And I love senior citizens, and they love me. I can walk in a room, and I don't sing, y'all, but I go in there and sing to them, and they like, damn, you can sing. So if that's not God helping me to find what I'm supposed to do, I don't know what is. And I really love that job because I feel like at the end of the day that not only am I able to support myself, but I'm helping somebody. You know, I can go home at nighttime and not worry about what I did to help somebody. You know. And then I have sponsees, and my sponsees sponsor me a lot. You know, because the thing about it is my disease tells me that, you know, I'm too busy. I can't get to the meeting tonight. I've got to rehearse for this play that I'm in. Or I got to go to line dancing class or some other shit, you know. But my sponsors will call me up and say, I want to go to the meeting with you. Well, what meeting can we go to? So, you know, I go to the meeting, acting like I'm taking them to a meeting, and they're taking me. You know? So that's how it works. You know, I mean, you help your sponsor just as much as they help you. You know? But like I said, God unlocked the gates of hell for me. I did not know that there was another way to live. I swear I didn't. You know, I was walking around hurting inside, and all I wanted to do is get some relief. And I got a hold of drugs, and I was medicating myself, too, because also I suffered with depression. And I probably had been suffering with it all my life. Because I remember my mother took me to a psychiatrist when I was a little girl. And I don't know if y'all ever been to a psychiatrist back then, but they used to put drops of ink on paper and then push them together and tell you, what does that look like? Now, what kind of shit is that? In fact, I get better quality of psychiatric care in the meetings for nothing. You know? You go pay $75 an hour to them, you can come in here and talk about whatever you want to for free. You know, because that's all it is letting that shit out of the pressure cooker. If you don't let it out, it's going to blow. But change or die. Change you must or die you will. And that is something that I deal with on a daily basis. I live by myself today. I used to think somebody was supposed to take care of me. That's the reason why I got married so many times. Not only that, you know, back then you could get a new credit card if you had a new last name. But the bill was in the mail. IRS and everybody else is after my ass. Even a school loan from over 35 years ago. Okay? So, I'm dealing with that, trying to pay everybody and pay my rent and pay my car payment. And sometimes I don't have no money left. But it's okay. I sometimes go to meetings and people will be talking about they got this job and they're making this kind of money and that kind of money. And I don't mean no harm, but that ain't happening with me. You know, maybe I ain't supposed to have no money because I definitely don't know what to do with it. Because when I had a little bit of money, I got so many damn clothes, y'all, I don't even know what to wear. I got clothes in my bedroom, so many clothes in my bedroom, I can't even get in my bedroom. Boxes of shit. Earrings, shoes, and some more shit. And most of the time I end up wearing the same old shit just so I wear the husband outfit. So I know I'm in the right place because y'all going to help me. I know y'all, some of y'all can identify with me too. Trying to be Miss Cutie on duty. But that's all right, because I'm blessed. I have a lot of girlfriends in recovery. Sometimes, you know, I'm the kind of person, I like to help you. I like to call you up and give you advice and tell you what you need to do. But when my shit gets bad, I don't want to call nobody. You know, some of my friends know this about me. And they'll call me up. Sometimes they call me like 3 o'clock in the morning. And you know what? You got to be brave to call me 3 o'clock in the morning. My mother don't call me 3 o'clock in the morning. Or like 6 o'clock in the morning, shit like that, Candy. And now that's what you call practicing some humility. So, my friends in recovery call me up and check on me. Because they know that I'm hurting or something ain't right if they haven't seen me at a meeting or whatever. And I, you know, that's just the way I am, you know. I guess people have to know me to love me and know that that's how I have to be treated, you know. But if you don't hear from me and I'm not around or whatever, you need to call me up and find out what I'm doing, you know, if I answer the phone. But I do have voicemail, so from time to time, I'll check my message and see who called. And I'm so glad that somebody had called me, because that helps too, even if I don't want to talk to them. But I had an experience on my job too, talking about change or die, that shows me that I've had some growth here. I have a boss that's about this tall. And one day, she had told me to do something, and I went back to her and told her that I had done what she told me to do. And she was like, I didn't tell you to do that. And I'm like, yes, you did. She jumped up and said, are you calling me a liar? I walked out of that office and sat in front of the computer. And she came in there where I was and was standing over top of me then. And she says, what did she say? She said, shut up and get out of her office. I sat there, it must have been about 5 minutes, but it seemed like an hour without saying anything. Because all this shit was running through my mind. But I get up and knock her ass out. Not only will I not have a job with rent to pay and a car note and some more shit, but I might be in jail. So after that eon of time passed me by, I got up and went in my office, and I had decided to go to headquarters and talk to her boss. And she, when I looked around, she was standing in the doorway telling me to come back in her office. She wanted to talk to me. Mind you, I had three witnesses when she said this to me, right? I went back in the office, and she told me that her husband had just left her and that she was going through something. And even, y'all, even in my mind, to show you how much better I'm getting, I wanted to tell her that that's a personal problem. You're not supposed to bring your personal problems to work. But I'm going to tell you how this program changed me. In my heart, my heart went out to her. You know, even though I know that you're not supposed to carry your feelings on your sleeve and you ain't supposed to go to work and take it out on people, I felt for her, y'all. Because the old me would have just used that to just jump right back at her. But I didn't. You know, and today, she still gets on my nerves, and I pray about her. But our relationship is much better. You know, but I went through that situation. You know what I'm saying? The easy way out would have been for me to cuss her out or hit her. You know, but the best way was for me to do what I did. And I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for you all in my high power. You know, a lot of times I tell people, some of the stuff I do is just a reflex from doing something so long over and over and over again. Somebody say something to you, you cuss them out. Somebody get in your face, you hit them. It's just automatic shit, you know? But change or die. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Ron. I'm Maddie. Before we open the meeting up to those who would like to share. No?
No, you can't do
that. I got 5 minutes.
Time. Yes, if you had time.
Okay. We had somebody come and read just for the day. Come on, baby. Maybe we got 5 minutes. I guess not.